watch list. And if he comes back right away, then you can say that nothing was really wrong with him that day, they just scratched him for some reason for another spot. And again, the line you're looking for, vied for the early lead, shook clear, approaching the stretch, could not withstand a winner's bid in the last 16. But this is one that Trevor had already wrapped up and had to do a quick turnaround in favor of Sylvan Express. Now the next race. This one's also a little late to cash.
No.
It is now.
Oh, I know, but I'm okay. Saying dump that one.
Look at the performance of Pine Tree Lane. Top world-class sprinter, isn't she? She's under pressure all the way against 21-2, 44-2. And when you consider a 21-2 versus the 22-flat of the previous race, and those are all for high-class horses too, they were really cooking here. Pine Tree Lane held until the very last stride and got beat by Flying Julia and L'Argent, right? In her next start, she goes 7 furlongs, and because she had gotten beat here, she was 5-1 with about 6 minutes to go into betting that day. People saying, well, if she got beat at 6, couldn't last at 6, she's not going to last at 7. And in spite of the fact that she was in a great pace spot in that 7 furlong ride.
And was on basics.
She made a shambles of that field. Sure. And she wound up paying $7 in something, a race that she really should have paid $4. She could have won by further than that. That's right. She was in a hand ride. Fairly old. The only one that was ever in ranger. But she won out of this race off this line. That's, you would have pulled her out of this race. The other horse you would have pulled out of this race, there's another one too. You would have pulled Boissier out of this race, forcing that pace and getting in deep stretch before she fell back. Not too bad.
How about Joy the Trip?
Said one of the other two horses is Boissier. I'm saving Joy the Trip.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
Boissier won.
Boissier came back to win big at 7 furlongs. She was never threatened in her race. Unfortunately, she only paid four something. Okay. But the point is, look what kind of good these kind of races do for these horses. It helps their conditioning to start with, plus a lot of them become hidden because they got beat. And the next time out, you look at them saying, well, they're going to wilt again, right? Except that they were challenging the bias. Now the other horses, we're going to get to bouncing. Through, I was down at Del Mar for this one, and watching this, I played blind Pine Tree Lane, and she paid four something to place, and most of my play was in place. As I watched that race, I was really nervous because she was under such extreme pressure. One of the horses that I had blurted out partway through the race, I had blurted out, look at Joy the Trip. Because Joy the Trip has never been much. She's run in some stakes races, but they're always minor types. I've never had any respect for her at all. And during this race, she was absolutely glued to these horses. I mean, she finished and she went well to the wire and she got me 3/4 of a length. Now, the problem with Joy the Trip, you put her on your horse to watch this out of this, but then you have to buy into a real danger with her. Unfortunately, we ducked that bullet. She did, but what does she do in her next start? She comes back in a classified allowance race this week, and she's bet heavily at the on the board. She's like 3-2 or 7-5, somewhere in that area. She's really a short price. Now this race represented the first race for her off of a fairly extended layup. Now, if you've ever done any athletics in your life, you know that the worst thing that can happen to you when you're first starting to get into condition is to really go out and play full court basketball or whatever it is for all you're worth, right? Because you can't get out of bed the next morning. At least I never could. But that's the worst thing you can do in terms of conditioning, right? So what happens to Joy the Trip? Off that layoff, she comes out and tries Pine Tree Lane every step of the way against 21-2, 44-2. So now here she is in her next start at a very short price. Now this is the concept of bouncing. It's when they do too much after a layoff. When they earn an enormous figure for you, and they wind up with ones across your board, and yet there's no race behind that race to say, maybe she's coming into condition or something. It's just too big an effort. And I've got to tell you, if you're getting 7-1 on her, don't worry about bouncing, play. If you're getting 4-5 on her or 6-5 on her, it's time to look at that and say, I'm going to play against her. That is the concept of bouncing. Any of you recall when Lazaro Barrera brought Tiffany Lass back to the races last June, I think?
Yeah.
Now, here's a horse that had never been beaten in her life. She had won the Kentucky Oaks the previous year, and after a year's layoff, he brings her back in the sprint, And he brings her back against Seldom Seen Sue and several others. Now, Seldom Seen Sue was being prepared for better races also. She was off of a short layoff. And in that race, Seldom Seen Sue is handled properly. She runs part of the race, and then she's kind of eased back, and she gets to the wire. In her next race, she stretches out a mile and wins easy, and she wins several races behind him, right? Tiffany Lass, on the other hand, to maintain her unblemished record, she's asked to win that race. She has to go 109 or 109-1 to win that off of a year's effort, or a layoff. She never ran a decent race again in her life. She was retired. She was a heavy favorite in the next race that Seldom Seen Sue won because she was conditioned a little bit better, or not asked for as much. And Seldom Seen Sue won the next one behind that, and Tiffany Lass was again the favorite. That's the concept of bouncing to the nth degree. Skywalker's brought back off of an extended layoff, and he's asked to win a seventh furlong race against On the Line, in which On the Line ran super. Skywalker ran him down in the last strides at seven furlongs, and then began to go like this, because that was the first race after that long layoff. He wound up running lesser in the Goodwood, and he got hurt actually, but he pulled the Breeders' Cup. You see that all the time? And that's a flag that you ought to wave at yourself, because these horses are going to come up with big numbers for you, and they're going to be short prices, and that's a perfectly legitimate call that you can make. Say, this horse, if it were me, just put yourself in put it in your situation, right? I've done too much. I can't walk the next day. That happens day in and day out. I mean, it's an absolute real life phenomenon. Yes.
Tom, is there any practice, like if they're racing the first of the month and then they run too hard, if they keep them off for a month, is that enough to work out those kinks then?
Yes, and you look at the workouts though.
Okay.
Because if all of a sudden a horse like Tiffany Lass, for example, she always worked well too. So now she's on. If he keeps her out a month, he didn't keep her out a month. She won that race and was back in a couple of weeks because that was the stakes she was being prepared
right.
for. So she
had to sell them. That's just two weeks is too much.
So you watch the workouts. The workout, if it's a fast working horse and all of a sudden the workouts are ordinary or less, you get concerned. But if she's back in a month and she's got a nice workout in the meantime, then you don't have to be quite as concerned.
Okay.
I can give you another example that doesn't involve a layoff. Shanghai, Dale Landers had him. And he took him out on a deep, deep track before they redesigned it. And he ran, he always was a front runner. He ran neck and neck with the horse the whole way and just missed by this much. Exactly 1 week later, the track was still deep and off. And he brought him back, and the horse finished last. And that horse never ran the same again from that day on.
It's real life. I mean, it absolutely happens. And if you're taking a short price on that kind of a horse, shame on you. Because you can make money against them. Just throw them out if they're short, especially if they're a short price. Throw them out. Just assume that the horse is going to bounce. If it's a fair price, then you have to do a little more digging in it. Don't take short prices on this horse. Yes.
Is this why Wayne Lucas's horses seem to burn out a lot, as I call it?
He runs them way out of condition.
Yeah, you wouldn't call that bouncing. They do regress a lot toward the end of the season. A lot of his clients want their money up front, so he runs them heavily as two-year-olds and overrate. No doubt, overraces them. But again, that's what they're in there for, so that's what they want from it. That's what he's doing.
It's hard
yes.
to throw his horses out.
Yeah.
You know that's what might happen. You don't know which way to go on him.
Well, look at overall. Now, here's a filly that was absolutely top-notch as a two-year-old, right? She ran fourth in a Hollywood Juvenile, which is, to me, the best Hollywood Juvenile has been run in many years. It's the one that Mifra Frito won. Purdue King was in that race. Tejano was in that race. Overall was in that race. And it was loaded. She runs fourth in that race. Then she goes to Saratoga and sweeps all of the two-year-old stakes, including one grade one, I think, in there. She wins another grade one behind that. And within about two more races after that, I mean, she couldn't beat you down there, stretch. But again, I mean, look what they've done. They've gotten all the stakes races out of her. She's got black type now. They've done everything. They've earned a lot of money for her. And if it were my horse, I don't think I'd want it that way. But again, that's the game he's playing. I mean, when's the last time you saw an older horse that Lucas had as a younger horse? I mean, now you open up a can to get those. These horses are very valuable. You don't. I mean, they wind up retired. But you don't get many Lucas older horses because that's not what they're. I mean, he trains them for speed. I mean, I got to tell you, probably someday he'll win a Kentucky Derby, but he doesn't train the horses the way they have to be trained to win that kind of race. That's why he's never managed to. But he gets them early. I mean, he's a hell of a trainer.
He keeps putting three in every year, though.
He's got the money to get in.
Yeah. Someday he'll get 12 in the field.
Pia was a favorite to win the Kentucky Derby. And I got to tell you, I never did talk to anybody who thought she had a chance.
Well, Roman's numerals can be out, too.
He's hardly ever had, according to Roman, he's hardly ever had a horse qualified. Capote was the only one that ever qualified, and he finished up the track because he had
to hit that I want to say something about Capote.
None of these horses qualified. No Capote.
That's right. I got some ribs. Last year, when I said, if you recall, when Capote broke his maiden, I sent him out as a horse to watch. Then he won the Norfolk Stakes. When he won the Norfolk Stakes, I met him that day. When he won the Norfolk Stakes, though, he ran so poorly in terms of the route, early energy and everything, I did not like him in a Breeders' Cup. I just didn't think he was really a true router. Well, he wins a Breeders' Cup anyway, right? And I was razzed for weeks. You know something? To my knowledge, I think he ran third one more time in his entire career.
Well, Groovy has the numbers to be a router, too, but you can't hold the horse back. If you can't hold the horse back, the numbers don't matter.
Depends on how they're trained, too. Lucas is a great judge of horse flesh, right? But he buys horses without the dosage in the first place, for the most part.
He had one 2 years ago, but it died. A little colt that had started with a K, I think, or an H. Sure.
Without knowing the specific trainer statistics, I mean, without really knowing exactly what trainers do, if you have a horse within the context of a normal form cycle, not after a layoff, that all of a sudden throws in a really hot race, you know, all of a sudden runs a speed rating that, you know, or a pace rating that is outstanding, and the horse is either not stepped up, or to the converse, is dropped, do you start smelling a bounce coming up? Is that
again, that's not a bounce.
That's not a strict bounce.
No, you look for, what you do is you smell a regression. I mean, any time a horse runs, any horse that runs a lights out race for 25, wins easy, gets beat a nose, his next start he's in for 20 or 16, right. I mean, what are they telling you? The guy's telling you, I just proved this horse is worth 25, but I'm going to give him to you one day only. One start. I'm going to give him to you for 20.
Well, there was a horse that was highlighted on one of the shows recently that Studi had, I think, that won for fun at 25. They ran him back at 25, and everyone claimed him. I mean, they just had a shake for the horse.
Yeah, but once they prove they're clearly worth more than the race they were in,
so you
don't want to see him in
sort of still smell around.
Sure. Now, on the other hand, when Snappy Van dropped from his $16,000 win to 10, really? I played him. This guy claimed him for 8. He's never been worth more than that in his life. He happened to win at 16. Now he drops to 10, right? Hell, he got him for 8, wins with him for 16. He ran second for 10. This guy's made a small fortune for that client on that horse. A drop to 10 was perfectly logical. And he wins easy.
One of the queer things, I'm just, again, trying to just key in on, just on the specific bounce thing. I guess in Queer's book, there was one of the statistical things that a horse, older horse, two long drives from the quarter pole through the stretch, a field that the horse might regress. Is that a statistical, I mean, unless you can really smell it out in his form cycle, an older horse with two consecutive long drives within a short period.
They've pretty much disproven that.
It just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. No, because you have some competitive horses that just do that.
They just do it all the time.
Yeah, they've pretty well disproven that.
Oh, they have? Oh, because I remember there was...
That was Ainsley anyway.
Oh, was that Ainsley? It was somebody.
Warren that disproved
somebody.
It.
Oh, okay.
Tom, your snappy, your snappy band thing, one part of it that doesn't make sense to me is if you've already proven the horse can win at 16, why not keep him at 16, take the higher purse or hope he'll get claimed at 16 or maybe 12.5, why go to 10?
Well, because, have you ever seen the horse? He's running front bandages. This is the first time I ever saw him.
I'm sorry?
Oh, he's running front bandages.
Right.
There's only so many. And he's a horse that was running for like 5 at one time. They claimed him for 8. Where do you think he's really going to go on this field? If I owned that horse and had already done that well with him, I'd tell the guy, drop him for 10, win another one. I mean, if he's claimed, I make $2,000 right there from the 8 to the 10, and I will have won one, two full purses, another second place finish, and maybe some, I don't remember what else he had. But that was why he was set a 5 to 2 in that race, too. Because people were saying, why would this horse drop out of 16?
I asked that question. Was he trained by Stein?
Yes,
Roger Stein's been doing that.
Yeah, okay. Because that...
Okay, that didn't bother me at all.
I asked Bud about that at the Gold Coast.
Well, what about it?
He said, made sense to him. Okay. It was just the same logic. He agreed with you. But
did he get claimed out of that race?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Sure.
So those people made a lot of money on that $8,000 claim.
But, you know, he likes to dump those horses. Once he gets the races out of them, get rid of them. He's got
to
feed them.
And then he ran forth and get his
right.
Well,
so,
yeah. Every one of those horses, there's something wrong with them.
Oh, sure.
That's why they're running the 10 and 12.
That's
it's
why the yellow
one.
That's
funny. You could have two.
All right, I'll write something this week or the next. Only, right now, it doesn't matter. I mean, you're, the Bay Meadows variants, they're a foot per second. I mean, you don't be using those anyway. Just kind of evaluate whether the horse really fits or not. Because when they get up around a foot per second, that's a 10-length, they're 9-10-length thoughts. What I'm going to do is send something out to you that says, use them. I'll recalculate it, but I think it's from zero now. Okay.
That's too slow.
You're going to see a lot of them because the racing program is in such bad shape up there. They've already cut purses drastically. And that's why a lot more horses are coming down here. But you get horses like Holy Smokes that came down here and won. You also get horses that can't run now that they're bringing down hoping to get some of these purses. Now it becomes a more difficult. Before, you only get the cream of the crop. Now you're getting some really poor horses down.
Do you think it's going to make sense now because of the size of the person? I mean, they seem to have been If you claim a horse is 12,000, 12,500, and drop him into a $10,000 race. Oh, yeah. Where you know he's going to win. He's still making money.
The only problem with that is, if you claim a horse for 12,500 and drop him in for 10, you've already sat on him for 30 days. Because you can't drop him until he's out of jail, right? Well, in the meantime, you don't claim a horse to sit on him for 30 days. You claim a horse to run him out next week. So once they've sat on him for 30 days and drop him, I hate that chap. Certain trainers can do it, most of them, it's a really negative sign because they're already willing to take a loss on that.
What if they race them right back at 16 and then drop right down to
3? Well, that's fine. But you claim them only, you run back at your money right.
You're still hanging on to the 1-3 for the track class difference?
For
that?
No.
Let me clarify something because I'm going to say something. Right now, the question that I got is, how many are variant subscribers here? Okay.
I used to be. You seen the
in the instructional material, I said deduct minus 0.30. Okay, for the shippers. Don't do that anymore. Just take them the way they are.
Well, now, originally, it was minus 0.30 for the shippers, and it was built there. It was a bit better. Keep up to go and see.
That was last year.
That's right.
Then I revised the part-time chart at Santa Anita, okay, which then changed the par, so that you were measuring against, and now the 0.30 was 10 points.
I no wonder I wish you know. What's your feeling about these shows? Because they're coming down, you know, in Plainwood.
You just missed that. We were talking about that. You're going to get a lot of the, before you were only getting the ones that they really thought would win down there, right? But now, because they've cut the purses so much, I'm going to be getting garbage.
Yeah.
Because the racing program is a little trouble.
Unless you have several of them. Even a 1-to-1.
Can we can hold it down here? I am recording this, and all I get is a mishmash. If you get a top end of that.
That's probably a good observation.
There's only about 4 or 5 horses that were shipped down here that were shipped to Bay Meadows. Might have been one of them, maybe 1 or 2 others, but the rest of them were Southern California horses.
Where did Holy Smokes go? She's been running up there for a long time.
That might be one or the other. Like I said, there's only about 4 or 5 worked from here originally.
Well, Palace Diglio.
When you say that,
he was from here originally.
Yeah, he is from here.
We had him in the 60s.
We've got tennis going down. The racetrack has gotten in such bad shape. You aren't getting. I just sent an article. Yeah, an article was published in the Tribune, Open Tribune. And the gist of the article was that 26 horses have been destroyed in this meeting, 18 of which were in racing accidents. Riders have been hurt, and they're literally boycotting up there. And if you look at the cards that are being carded at Bay Meadows, you're liable to have, on a single day, you're liable to have 4 maiden 12-5s, 3 at 62.50, and maybe 2 decent races. It's all we're getting. It's all that's being given.
I remember one Friday night, the feature race was an $8,000 claiming race.
No, I believe that.
Yeah. Do you know anybody up there in management of that track?
I'm surprised they're still sending our horses up there for the stakes with that information. You'd think they would be afraid to risk them.
Well, but again, it's a chance. Like Foreign Legion is now a stakes winner.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
I have a lot of hopes that Golden Gate will be good.
Always is.
Yeah. I like Golden Gate.
Are you going to give it a break?
Yeah.
Just to go to the last race that we didn't cover, did you have Mr. Dunoff's last race?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the reason I like Prophet Island at her next start. Yeah. That's the reason I used her in that 509 exact, and I hope some of you did the same thing. Are you recording again? always a good one. You're talking. The race that we didn't do, if you look at the race, you'll see that Prophet Island, who normally runs from off the base, challenged that early pace through that race into the stretch before she wilted on a track that, again, was killing early pace. In her very next start, she gets beat a neck after going 5 wide around the clubhouse turn and pays a big price. Keys of $509 exactly. Now she is a horse that would have been a horse to watch out for that, but we made her horse to watch out for her next race. The horse that ran third in there is the one that really interested me, and that was Miss Adun. Now Miss Adun, I happened to play her in that race, and she broke my heart a little bit. She fought for the lead all the way around the racetrack, was still in a position to win the race, and had put away every horse that I thought was a legitimate contender. And here comes a horse called Pie Dye, that belonged pulling the starting gate as far as I was concerned. And her Royal Grace, who I didn't have a whole lot of regard for either, and they both run her down in a stretch to beat her. Let me tell you how live she was. You can't see that on that chart. She was 5-1 in a race. She paid $9.40 to show. I think she wasn't well attended in that race. And she ran super. Unfortunately, the racetrack beat her.
She's running today.
I know she's running today. She's in there with Prophet Island this morning. And Romantic Jet. Surprise. Now, I got to tell you, if I were there, though, I didn't do the races, I don't have my figures, but I would definitely make sure that I played Miss Adun in Prophet Island in some way. Whether it's exact is, or side bets, or a major play, I don't know. Because they're both in that race, and they both look great. Pardon?
Yeah, maybe.
Wait, what? Somebody said chalk?
No, a little girl took all that chalk.
Oh, I was going to say that. Those are his.
Chalk? Oh, no.
Just to her chalk, because we're meant to just be in bold. Okay.
Take care.
Yeah, take
care.
See exactly why. What happened? What I got for listening to Tom and listening to your response was that you're going to learn an awful lot about handicapping per se by trying to isolate these horses to watch, because now you're getting into using the results charts for something other than to see if you want to race or not.
Howard, let me interrupt for just a moment. Rinskowski, is he still around?
Yeah.
He's figured out, he's really got a neat way of keeping the results charts. Me, I get the chart recaps every week. That's what the way I approach it. Show them what you, this is a really good idea. I don't know.
Tremendous. Maybe the best idea I've ever
everybody does it, but I still thought it was a great
idea. You know, for 2 years, I wanted to figure out something, and it was fortuitous because the plane never made it to Vegas one day, but I was forced into to reducing them, and I can take these into the sports, you know, the race books with me, because they're really handy. What's in this little book here, which isn't very big, is everything from Oak Tree. So that's what, 3 months now or whatever. So I got 3 months of charts in here. Tom Hamilton started me on this with spiral notebooks 2 years ago or whenever I started this. And then this literally came to me a month ago. I was here playing off track in San Bernardino, and I said, holy crap. Nice. I mean, just one of those flashes that came into my mind.
It's a terrific idea, because I had clipped and pasted the charts before, but 3 months ago, they were like, that's
I know.
You can't carry a stack of chart recaps into the race book.
That's right.
No.
Well, you can, but
it's a lot awkward.
Machine and reduce them?
Yeah, 70%.
That's pretty expensive.
70%?
Well, that'd be 30% reduction. 70% of the size gives you right about what you need.
We can reduce our own right here. Thank you, that's a good idea. And those results, what Horses to Watch is half the battle.
No, just do right in the
floor. What you learn from Horses to Watch will be one thing. What do you do now? You get a horse in the top two, it doesn't win for you, and you forget the horse. It's like waking up in a new world. Next time he runs, you forget what he did in the last. Now this way, you have contact with all the work you did before on a horse. When he fails to win the race, or does win the race, or comes in second, now you know how to watch that horse for future profit. And you get a much better feel for the realities of racing at this track when you couple your handicapping with.
Did I tell you it was good over the phone?
You think you'd get a lot more insight into the race you're handicapping? If you check the baseline you've selected against the results chart?
Well, yes, but you want to make a science out of this, and you become a researcher instead of a handicapper. Yes, you could say, how did I predict he would run early into the race? He didn't run early, or the race ran sustained, things like that. But I would not want to put it into a database where you would be overemphasizing your research on it, because only because of my experience with researchers is that they become horrible handicapped. They become so immense and immersed in research and all these little things. And then it disturbs more pages. It suddenly finds that while 53% predicts the winner, they actually run it in 5280 and it gets him all upset. Remember, energy is predictive. It is not necessarily what actually happened, because the magic of the race alters that. But it still is highly predictive. What are some of the figures you came up with in those races? What was on those?
Can we stay with that?
Sure.
The application of that notebook. The reason I'll start doing that, because I like to take my stuff in a briefcase to the racetrack, because I'm making all kinds of notes now. But what I do at home after I handicap the race, what I'll then do is go back, anybody that I'm considering betting, I'll go back into the charts of his last race, sometimes the second race back, and go back in and see that. Now, Golden Bow, whether you had that as a horse to watch or not the other day, if you'd have done that, you have the horse on top, right? So now you look, and you go back and look at the race that he was in to see who was in the race, if you recognize anybody that's come out of the race to run well, which you would have. Plus, the one thing you notice is that all of a sudden, the running line shows him being beaten by one length by Snappy Band in your past performance. But when you go to the charts, you see that he was 3.5 lengths in front of the third horse that day, which adds some strength to the horse you're about to bet. And that's what I do. Well, I always go back and look at any horse that I'm about to bet, just to look at the race that it was in before.
Tom, seriously, since I started using this religiously, I find myself looking up, I'll make probably 8 references a day to it while I'm handicapping. And it's so easy now. Before, I used to have to dig through stacks of forms and all this other stuff. Now it encourages you to use it more because it's so handy, is really what's happened. Like Campanella, I singled yesterday because I could clarify what his trouble line meant and that he finished well. I singled Please Remit because I could see that horse ran wide the whole race. It said wide in the form, but it was around the clubhouse turn, down the backstretch. You know, it was a $20 horse or whatever?
$23.
Right.
So and you're just taking the whole, the sheet from the racing form and shrinking it right down.
Just two sides. That's it. You're done.
They're invaluable. and I encourage you all to use them.
Do you do it that way or not? It's up to you. I think that's a great idea. Because my wife is my secretary.
All right.
So she's going to threaten me every time I call up, and I'm like.
When you're ready and can analyze chart recaps, you make them work for you, they are great. Some of you I know personally are not ready to do that because it will give you one more thing to confuse you. If you're confused by what you already have, you're not ready for chart recap. So remember, this is an individual thing. Those who can't, those who get confused by them, until you're ready for them, until you've smoothed out all the other things. These guys have smoothed out all those other things that are confusing for them. But take it one step at a time. Don't try to reach for the moon or emulate a guy until you have reached his level of insight. My only advice on that is I will get the failures from this advice. Successes go on. I mean, I will hear the failure.
I don't think there's any danger in this because you're not facing. All you're doing is checking your own work, going back to see how strong that horse might have really been. Not changing anything, basically.
If you do it for that purpose, but if you try to start reading 50 different analytical things into it, you will sometimes get weighted down by it. And so I've seen too many people who have tried to do a complete analysis, and these fellows are doing it in a way that is significant, correct. And what you just had for most of this day and this horse to watch should be one of the greatest assets you've had. Because not only, even if you don't build a horse to watch, separate bets from a horse to watch this, it will give you a whole new insight into some of those horses you've already handicapped, into where they fit, where to look for them to succeed next time, where to look for them not to succeed. So for that, it's probably one of the most valuable sessions you'll ever become. And we promised you this morning we would show you how to use the criteria you have had for. How many of you have been with us since 82? 83? 84? 85. Since 82, you've had the ability, via the basic Cumpliano section, of which is repeated here at the given everybody, phase 3 manual. Those of you who got the New York, the Albany Saratoga manual, how many have that one? In which we did a complete form cycle, some horses with bar graphs showing their ups and downs, from which we developed the pluses, O's, and pluses within an O forms. Since San Bernardino is so close by, but I still can't go every day, I have been getting the form every day, and having my friends going down there all the time, I can send money with them. And so I built my own down and dirty stable with the concept of horses to watch who are coming into form or whose form cycle indicates that today will be the day that they will at least be in the money. And it's been very successful. And it's simply done with this particular procedure. How do I build a stable? I take 3-year-olds, horses that just turned 3 for this year. I prefer horses that have nothing to go to encourage you to want them. You wouldn't buy them if you were an owner, and you wouldn't want them if you were a top trainer. Why? Because I want to look at mediocre horses, and I want to get the price. You understand my reasoning? You have a stable of 4-year-old allowance horses trained by the better trainers, then it's no secret that those horses are going to come into form and win, place, and show with a certain degree of regularity. I'm looking for horses, watching them grow. So I'll start with their 2-year-old record, and now they just turned 3, I want to plot them. So there'll probably be, for some of you, if you start plotting tomorrow, it'll probably be late February or early March before you make your most successful bets. You might have one come in soon. Now, remember what the sheets gave you, the dozen sheets and the thoroughgraph sheets. They gave you a total number and some little indications of what happened. With them, the lowest number was the best, with us, the highest number. And We don't have to go into how to make total energy by class level here, because you all have hard times for Santa Anita, and you, for the most part, have Tom's variance. So that if this were being done in Nebraska, it would take another 4 hours even to get to this point, but you have the variance. You adjust their total energy, which is variant energy, by whatever Tom says was an open adjustment for that day. That goes. Similar to what those fellows did, you put the date. June's, you want to put the month and break it down to 4 weeks the way they did, that's fine, or put the actual date. I'm talking to a given 3-year-old here, calling Perko. These races are all, I'm just chalking around, so it could be 8.5 to 9 furlong. I bought him to be a router. I'm not going to count his sprints. If you want to get real refined, you could count his sprints. But I'm just worrying about him when he's in a router. Apparently he's a router, at least by my indication of what he's shown in the past. You want to put in both routes and sprints and adjust the sprints to the routes via Tom's adjustments, do that. The point is to get his corrected or adjusted total energy. Here's this poor little horse. He starts off at 16th. He runs 53.40 against, and here's the key to making this work for you, against a 10.4 second call pace. Just writing in right after the total energy. What was the... That's the pace of the race, because that was the pace of the horse that led second call. He came in sixth. The only indication you need.
Is that the second call energy?
That's the time. Now this is his total energy. Adjusted energy. And you've got his variance, so you see what you've saved 5 hours right there. Yeah. So you have his adjusted total energy on that horse for that day. Okay, you got to start somewhere, so that's the first step of the journey. Next time, runs 53.80, runs against a 10.3, comes in fifth. Lo and behold, he runs slower total energy next time out, but he runs against an 11.3, and he wins the race. Right here now, I've got my first clue. My horse cannot, at this stage in its life, run against a 110.4, neither can it run against a 110.3 as well. Suddenly we find a pace of 111.3 and he wins the race. Now I have a short history. That short history tells me I want to look, see if this horse is going to be in a race today where the second call time will be in the 111.3, 111.4. So I follow him, and no, he doesn't get a race like that next time out. He runs against a 110.2. And you can anticipate these with the ESP program. The ESP concert. He comes in fifth. Right. Next time he runs just a little, against a little faster pace than he's proved successful out of 111.1, but he does come in fourth. Now, if I am sitting here and I see this horse entering into a race in which I perceive that the fastest second call will be 111.4, and I know that I pretty well know what his total energy is adjusted to these distances, I know that at a 111.4, he can run as low as 53 and be at least placed. He's going off at anything like good odds today, like the one, the first one I charted, paid 980 to place in exactly this situation. Against a 111.4, this horse won the race. Now these are all arbitrary, these numbers. They could be 53s or anything else. I suddenly got him to 55s inadvertently.
Yeah, it's clear.
And down to change distances or something. still in the same ballpark with his total energy, but runs well against a 111.4. Hot. Now he's going to be a favorite, probably. Next time he runs a little bit more total energy, he runs against a 110.4, I stay home. I don't send any money. Now, he's a failed favorite, and everybody says, oh, let they get off of him. Came in six. Next time he runs against the 111.3 and a lower total energy, then he wins the race. I'll guarantee you, if you'll chalk, take yourself about however many you can handle. Start with, say, 10. Take five, take four routers, four sprinters, and two turf horses. Now remember, the turf horses, you're probably looking for a horse who's a second call that you can close on. It can close on. Whatever, this is the key in coupled with your adjusted total energy to building a profile, a sheet on that horse, which I can guarantee you will be far more effective than your thoroughbred sheets or your Rogozin sheets. If we were take one of these horses, in fact, do this, pick up some Rogozin or thoroughbred sheets, it'll be on the floor. You find them all over the floor. Get some. This is going to be a valuable experience for you. And you'll see that when those horses, so-called bounce, off of a very good figure, yes, they might have gone out of form, but I'll bet you that 70% of the time, not only did they appear to have gone out of form, they ran against a second call they couldn't handle. This is especially valid if you do it with claimers. And I don't care how cheap they are, but somebody asked me yesterday, what would you do if, unless you were real experienced or real daring or real willing to take a chance on the cheaper claimers, I said, okay, be comfortable with yourself. Take it from $16,000 to $24,000 claim. Have that in your stable. I would go, if they had $3,000 claimers, I'd go with three and four and five to do it because my prices would be better. But be comfortable in the area where you're comfortable and go 16 to 34. You got any comment on this, Tom?
I'm listening.
Oh, I got a comment on it? No.
Sure.
Do you agree or disagree? Is it valid?
Sure. What does it say in the back of your shirt?
No, but I just thought maybe you had some insights. You could add some things. Maybe there's something I left out. Maybe you should have some trip notes here. Since you're now learning how to use the results charts, you want to take what you've already learned and add it to this? Just get a wider piece of paper. And you might put what went wide. Or supposing you ran against a 111.4 and did badly. And it screws up your whole concept. And whoops, when he's supposed to win, he didn't. You might want to put a note. Have a little note place over here. Went wide, got blocked.
Broke the
whatever. Or put that down. Send it to the self-addressed.
And I'll refund your bet.
Tom will send you.
Well, do I have a pile for you?
They also take a split of your winnings, too. I don't know how well you're doing.
Oh.
Take any horse you want, just when you get home, and do a little exercise with it. And look to see some horses you're going to look at. They've only got three good races shown. Look to see at the same distance. It's preferable to take them at the same or comparable distance, rather sprint. At the same track, what will happen to you too often when you look, you find a couple of bay meadows, and some will be standing in the bay meadows, and there'll be a. And you, the only way you can do that is then to adjust your second call to what is comparable at that track, and you know how to do that. You can really take some races from that track and take the energy of the second call there, as opposed to ours, and make the adjustment. Then you have to do it feet per second.
What am I stupid for? You look in the form and you see horses that started out of names and then they start them out of the next stage. I'm just saying, if you start bringing them down looking for the level, is there some way that this can be used to find that horse's level before maybe even the trainer?
Well, if you're going to find out all this, you're certainly going to find its level. You're going to find, if you, I was suggesting you put it, this is up to you. Now, I've been doing it without putting level because I've been choosing claimers who cluster around a lower level. Now, maybe you're going to find some of these horses that have a wild history of maidens, mistakes, claiming and allowance and stuff. But mostly those horses are established as like they are 3-year-old and turned 4 by now. But if they're just starting off, you're starting off with 3-year-olds now, you're not going to find that as much as you think you will. Now, next year, hey, this thing's going to be up to the ceiling. You're going to have a complete history on that horse. And you will if you make your class notes, class level notes, or purse value notes, or what he ran for in purse, or class level, whichever you, or both. It's unlimited what you can do. And if you own that horse, you know, hey, when I put this horse into a non-winners of one type of allowance, he tells me I should have left him in the claiming run. Or, look what he did, and the same concept, running better than par, adjusted par for the day. Things like that will give you notes on this horse. But your most important set of facts to start off with is, what did he do, total energy, which is what Tom uses, the varying energy, against what pace? As, now, I wouldn't get too, right now you're talking about 16, 24 claiming. As he moves up the ranks, you like him and he works well for you, then you want to keep going with it. When he peeks off here somewhere and just never seems to do anything, or never seems to find a pace, jump him and get yourself another horse. Well, just taking the form the other, last week, I was able to find one race a day which had either won at a good price or placed at a good price. Just one a day, just looking at them. Because I didn't do a complete history. All I did was average horses, total energy, against the favorite or something in the race. I'm playing it in a single race base. I haven't built my complete list on it. The favorite's maybe got a, in the sprint I'm thinking of, he had like a 57 total once. But his average was like 56, whereas this horse's average was like 56.40. And he was clearly, to me, the horse would be hard to beat in that race. And he was beaten, but he paid 980 to play.
Now I'd like to add something.
All right.
This idea of figuring out where they belong, I do this quite a bit, personally. And the way you do that is you have the variant program to start with. You may or may not have my variants. If you have my variants, you've got a way of comparing. What you'll do is you'll take the last two or three races on a horse that's running in maiden races, for example, that's getting beat. You'll take the last two or three or four races on a horse, run them through the variant program, and get that variant pace energy. And then look at the general, I mean, don't average them necessarily, but look at the, get a feel for what he would normally run, right? Then you've got the part-time chart. Then you look up on the part-time chart what class level, if I were an owner, this is exactly what I'd do. I'd look up on the part-time chart as to what the